How is it going, everyone? Okay, so who we have here today? Hi, Fred. How, Kate? Howie, Rob. Good to see all of you here. И здравствуйте, Тарас. Everybody, welcome to our tap room that is opened every Thursday. It is the only tap room where you are welcomed to make a bubble through a straw. And today our topic is Starwind Drop makes a pint of Microsoft Windows Server environment taste better. Much better, actually. And before we will start, I'd like to make a quick check of the system to make sure that everything runs properly and smoothly. So please drop me a quick message in the GoToMeeting chat box or questionnaire box. And just let me quickly know if video and audio are okay. Meanwhile, thank you, Fred, Rob, and Mitch. Thank you for your feedback. So let's move on. Beside the good old friends in the room, I see a lot of new names here. So I'd like to remind everyone that this is a tap room and it's initiated by Starwind Software Incorporated, and it occurs every Thursday. And before we will start, I want to assure everyone that the happening is recorded and the record will be uploaded to our website really soon. To be more exact, it's going to be tomorrow. And also, if you have some questions, please type them all in immediately just after you get those questions in your head. And obviously and traditionally, if there will be really great, perfect, and interesting questions, I will gladly unmute the person who asked them, and we will have a brilliant conversation. Now, just a quick introduction of myself for the ones who don't know who I am. My name is Anatoly, but you, my friends, can call me Tony. I've been in IT for 7 years, and six of them are dedicated to Starwind. Right now, I'm leading the support department worldwide. I prefer drinking scotch or Cointreau, but I'm a little bit sick today, so I think I will get a couple of glasses of wine. Okay, so let's rock and bottoms up. Let's review agenda of today's session. When is it better to use pure Microsoft technologies, or maybe it is better to give the system a good old pint of Starwind? This great discussion will be served as bitter. Demo stand overview will be a quick bitter shot. And then we'll open the main drink bottle and we'll see the Starwind software in action. And then we'll have the after party where all the questions will find their own answers. Okay, let's get it started. Here is what Microsoft have on the left side, and there is Starwind on the right. Lone wolf. So let's just run through all that both have to ensure business continuity, decrease or increase the TCO, and discuss when it will be better to use one or another solution. We'll do it one by one. Numero uno in our list is sure nothing live migration. That makes it possible to move the virtual machines from one running physical Hyper-V host to another without downtime. At that, you need to neither a shared storage nor clustered Hyper-V host. Shared nothing live migration helps manage scheduled downtime. However, it does not, and I repeat, it does not protect from unplanned downtime. For example, any hardware software failure, you know. The big issue with this approach is inability to build a guest virtual machine cluster because it requires shared storage, Fiber Channel or iSCSI. In addition, migration takes too much time if there are many virtual machines, or there are few but with a big amount of data within them. And since the process implies the movement of entire virtual machine on disk image and virtual machine memory content from one physical Hyper-V host to another, that makes the situation even not too flexible, let's be polite, right? Starwind, on the other hand, utilizes the same hardware and software and solves the issues mentioned above. It provides assistance with both planned and unplanned downtime. With Starwind, it's easy to build a guest VM cluster because it's a fault-tolerant iSCSI design itself. The VM data store can be any size because all the data is synchronized between the hosts. So, to sum this part up, error, no keyboard, press F1, no keyboard, press F1. You know, if something will happen with the a system where the shared nothing live migration is configured, you know, it will be a tough time for you guys. Well, to be more exact, going to be a tough time for the one who actually configured that system. So the next in the list is Hyper-V Replica that ensures effective virtual machine level disaster recovery. It enables virtual machine replication and manual failover in case of sudden server breakdown. However, you liked the word, didn't you? However, it does not deliver automatic failover. Data is asynchronously replicated within a minimum 5 minutes interval. So that thereafter the failover, there is data loss for the reference parameter. Along with the manual failover, Starwind ensures automatic failover and thereby providing continuous availability, zero data loss, and the best RTO and RPO values. Since Starwind makes synchronous mirroring, there is no difference between the data kept on both storage servers. And again, let's sum this up. If you want something that will not that will give complete protection of the data, that is actually where the Starwind come from. You know, because it gives the fully automated data failover and failback. Okay, let's move on. Scale out file server, and this is actually not on the slide, but that was assumed to be used with the cluster storage spaces. Well, usually that is how it's configured. So that solution actually is pretty cool, and Microsoft positioning the SMB3 at the, well, kind of mainstream in the virtualization shared storage protocol, if I may say in that way. But the trick here is that this solution requires too much hardware, in my opinion, when talking about the minimalistic configuration. So just a quick introduction to how Microsoft sees the minimal configuration of virtualized infrastructure that runs on top of the SOFS and CSS. Well, first of all, and that's kind of obvious, you should have at least two servers to run the Hyper-V cluster. Well, I'm okay with that. No problem with me here. And also, you will need two additional servers that will run the storage part. To be more exact, it's something like compute part of storage part, right? And the storage itself should be dedicated SAS JBOD. Well, okay, one SAS JBOD is not too expensive, you would say. Yeah, agree, it's not, but it's going to be a single point of failure. And to avoid single point of failure, you should have two. Oh no, two it would be good as well, but you need, according to Microsoft best practices, you should have three SAS JBODs to achieve maximum fault tolerance and avoid single point of failure in your system. So, summing it up, two Hyper-V hosts, we're okay with that. And additionally, you need to have two servers licensed with Windows Server. Yeah, that's going to be a 2.5K, well, approximately. and three CJ buds with S wires, and obviously each wire requires the CES HBA on the server side, on the client side. That's not too cheap, in my opinion. On the other hand, Starwind can be installed on the same machines where the Hyper-V is running and convert its storage into the shared storage that can be used as a CSV or, you know, any type of shared storage that the system may actually require. And thus, well, you know, to make a long story short, Starwind doesn't require anything, and it can run on, it can seamlessly integrate into your existing infrastructure. Well, I know that right today we're talking about the Microsoft solutions, but let's make a little step aside, and I'd like to say that it's actually still the case when talking about the VMware. I mean, that Starwind can integrate, because yeah, I know that VMware guys, you would say, hey, VMware is not Windows, I need to have additional license for that. How can I get it? Okay, and tell me, and you know, just show me at least one virtualized VMware infrastructure that doesn't have Microsoft Windows Server licenses. You know, I will give you $100 if that's going to be a production environment, obviously. I know your tricks, right? And just a quick comparison with the VMware vSAN. Starwind is more flexible here as well, and I'll just give you some bullet points. So Starwind doesn't require anything proprietary, because you know the vSAN usually wants to have switches and flash. Also, great bullet point of Starwind here is that Starwind has a locked structured file system, unlike vSAN of VMware. And the final thing is that we Starwind actually is that Starwind has a more friendly licensing policy. It's tricky here, so I'd like to pay attention to that fact. So when talking about the VMware, you should have the VMware vSAN licensed on all of the hosts that you have in your system. So 10 hosts, for example, all of them should have the vSAN license. With Starwind, you can start with actually one host with one license of Starwind. That will cover only one host, you know. Obviously, that will not give you high availability or fault tolerance, to be more exact on the storage level. But you know what you're doing, right? If you want high availability, no problem. Get two license. And by the way, for the VMware users, we have the time limited offer, and we're giving away the 2-node license with unlimited capacity for free. And let's get back right here to the Microsoft topic. And we have the free 2-node offer for the Microsoft users as well. It's not that open actually, but still, if you are a Microsoft specialist like MVP, MCP, MC something else, just you know, drop a quick email to me and I'll make sure that you will get a free to not license with unlimited capacity. Well, no hook and bite here. You know, if you want to know, they're gonna be to know. No time bombs, no, nothing else, no tricks. Okay, and the last option in the topic here is the Microsoft SQL Target. Microsoft SQL Target, and this is really good shared storage solution. Well, okay, never mind. May I actually ask you to drop me a quick message, the ones who is using it. I mean, you know, software is not released, it's allowed to escape. In my opinion, that's the case. I mean, it's good for testing And I'm actually using MS as guided target for testing, but nothing more because I don't see big value here. And the big question for me, why haven't this thing been excluded from the Windows Server Installator? Well, I don't want to be rude, but just check the market. This thing is not developed. Everything else develops. This thing not. Just make your own conclusion here. And I will not even tell how exactly this thing gonna compare with Starwind. Okay, so the next slide is actually a demo stand overview, but simultaneously with overview in the demo stand, I'd like to make a quick recap of Starwind actually, what Starwind actually does and how people can benefit from it. So this is what you see is my demo stand, and this is actually the minimalistic footprint, hardware footprint that Starwind provides, allows to configure, allows to have. So we have only two servers. Those servers are running Hyper-V currently, but also they can run the VMware. That's not going to be a problem at all. Also, in case of Hyper-V, Starwind installed on the same partition with the Hyper-V, not like the virtual machine, because in case of VMware, Starwind installs at the virtual machine. Also, Starwind ensures all the levels of fault tolerance to keep your data secure, safe, and also Starwind speeds up everything due to one or another technologies. So the brief list of those speeding up technologies are log structured file system, which eliminates IOLander effect, and boosting up the speed of the priority rate. By the way, why that's happening? Because Starwind actually coalesces Starwind LSFS log structured file system coalesces, or to put it more, clear, it combines all the small random writes, typical for virtualized environment, into the stream of big sequential writes. Thus, there will be no spot burns, and since this is big write, it can affect multiple spindles on the priority rate. And also the small randoms, which are basically considered as the performance killers, are killed themselves, which is cool. Also, Starwind provides the tiered caching model, so level 1 cache absorbs all the writes, and that thing is actually powered with the randomness memory, which is, fast as hell. And the level 2 cache is powered by the flash, and it absorbs the reads. And just a quick hint for you guys, for the ones who would like to implement log structured file system in their environments, the perfect solution for the perfect configuration for the Starwind LSFS is going to be L1 RAM, L2 flash, and the backend, the actual disk space, should be a chip spindles. In this way, the system will be the most cost efficient, than ever. Okay, so we're done with that part. So let's see Starwind in action. Okay, let me quickly grab the remote desktop to one of my servers, maybe even two servers. So the first one is booted up, and I'm bringing it to your attention here. By the way, anyone knows how to do though the server manager wouldn't pop up all the time? Ah, never mind. I'm gonna Google for it later. Okay, so this is well prepared actually system. As you can see, the Internet Explorer here made it the task that it was designed for to download Google Chrome. And what I'd like to show you here is that I have the Starwind Mighty Management Console here installed. And that thing always it's shy, so it always hides into tree, right? And let's imagine that this is some kind of, really clean system, really fresh system. Quick introduction, this is Zeck server. So let me quickly guide you through Starwind configuration steps. So what you need to do, you need to, first of all, after you have opened the Starwind Management Console, is to add the server. The first one is, in 90% cases, going to be local server. The second one is going to be the one that will run the partner connections. Oh, I have mistyped the domain name. Okay, that was heard. So once again, SWPHVN1. Cool. Then you can double click the server. And the other option, you can click connect button. Oh, Fred, thanks for the hint. By the way, for the ones who didn't know how to disable server manager from splashing up all the time, you should go to server manager, manage in the drop down, server manager properties, and tick do not start. Let me quickly guide you through that. So manage server manager properties. Do not start server manager automatically at the logo. Oh, thanks, Fred. Okay. So as you can see, this system is actually pre-configured already. I've got the test targets, I've got the CSV, I've got the quorum, VDL thing to emulate how Starwind VTL can be configured with the Beam software. By the way, that's a good software, So first thing first, how to create the Starwind target. There are two ways. Short way, click at device button, give target a name. Let's call it Fred Rockstar. Cool. And that, well, and you actually already have the shared storage here. The second way is taking a long path actually, and you need to click on a host and go click on Add Device Advanced. And this will go guide you through the long wizard, which actually has its own benefits. So the benefit starts right here. You can choose the SIG provision or SYN provision. The one that we have just created is SIG provision. SYN provision assumes LSFS. And as the and usually this option is actually enabled. Next step is configuration of caching. So by default, stop. Well, we cannot see it here. So by default, Starwind creates 128 megabytes of level 1 cache and L2 disabled. So I'm gonna keep it disabled here, and the next step is configuration of the level 2 cache. And as you can see, it's recommended to use in the right through, and once you are clicking on the right back mode, it actually gives you a hint like, hey, stop, what are you doing? So I'm gonna keep this without cache at all. It's gonna be a simple storage. So let's stick with the Rockstar. Let's make Freight highly available. So right click Replication Manager and click Add Replica button. If you want to create the disaster recovery size, stick with the asynchronous one-way replication. If not, choose the one on the top of the list. You need to enter the IP address or the domain name of the partner host, so that's going to be HVN1 again. And you need to create the partner device. Again, stick with the default here. Here you need to specify the IP addresses that are going to be used for the synchronization channel and the heartbeat channel as well. By the way, if someone of you don't know what the synchronization channel is and the heartbeat channel is, please drop me a quick message. I'd like to share this information on the QA session. Okay, so in a few seconds, the device is going to be synchronized. Cool, huh? Okay, so it's already synchronized, and only thing that is actually left is to configure the connection to it through the iSCSI initiator. Yeah, so as I said, using for testing purposes. Okay, so where is the Rockstar here? Here, the Rockstar here. This runs on the HVN3, so that thing is local. And while connecting, you need to make sure that the connection will go through the local IP address to the local IP address. Cool. And where is my another favorite Rockstar? Here it goes. And this one should go through the dedicated NICs. Usually, we recommend to use to put the heartbeat on the same network interface card that's gonna that are gonna run the iSCSI client connections. Oops. Oh, let's just make a quick connect. Okay, now let's go to the second server and perform the approximately same steps here again. Find the Rockstar. Let's make a quick connect this time. Searching from the Where are you hiding, my love? Here it goes. Okay, so go away. So once we have done all of that, we can go to the disk manager. MSC. Really? Yeah, really. And check where the Freight Rockstar is. After that, you need to bring the disk online, initialize it as GPT, that's important, and create the new volume. The trick here is that, well, if somebody of you doesn't configuring the volume labels, I will blame you guys, because once you are just, it's really useful. Really. Really, 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 really. Okay, and the default allocation unit size should be 64K. according to our best practices, which are based on our internal testing. Okay, once it was done, you can go to the failover cluster manager. Oh, by the way, let's come on, stop hanging. Let's disable it again. Okay, so here the failover cluster. I've got two nodes here, hopefully. Yeah. I've got the role here with a lot of things actually. And I've got some C-suite here. So that disk that we have just created will be easily picked up here. Looks like this is the one that we want. So 1, 2, 3, and voila. We can go to the properties, give it another name. That's cool. Okay, so let's get back to virtualization business. This is going to be our victim, the victim of our test. Okay, so let me quickly log in and prove you that this thing is actually live. Okay, 0000 1488. Oh, my password. Only thank you, Father, for my long last name. Okay, so there. The 0000 1488. Jesus, it's gonna be second too long. I'm too young to wait until you boot up. Okay. So let's run the command line. Google. Okay, so as you guys see, this thing is actually live. So let's also check where exactly is it running. And it's running on HV1 while we are on HVN1. So that's why we're gonna actually switch to HVN3 box. Whoa, that's not what I wanted. Not what I wanted, I said. That's HVN3. Let's open the failover cluster manager. Wait a couple of seconds. Connect to our test virtual machine. Yeah. Okay, so here it goes. And what I want to do right now, well, again. is to reboot this physical server. And, you know, let's just simulate that something is planned or unplanned happens. Yes, restart. Okay, and let's continue actually checking what's going on here, and let's continue just working with the virtual machine here. Let's close this and that other thing. Let's trace, and this is what the switch time. Okay, let's trace something else. Okay, something random. How about your DRC staffing.com? Gonna be a long way. As you can see right here, the Starbend reported that one host was disconnected, which actually means that the Starbend is officially dead on that machine. Nevertheless, we're still trying to find out the route and all the hopes to that traffic, to that domain. It's a long way, actually. Fred, there is a long distance between you and me. Okay, well, never mind. Let's just, you know, for fun, wait until the thing's gonna work. And let's move on to the Q&A sessions. Well, yeah, but before, let me just quickly sum up. That is why, actually, Starwind is the shared storage that everybody needs, because that thing protects from all kind of disasters and planned or unplanned maintenance. Should anything happen with half of the system, everything will still be up and running. And well, moreover, it's not shown right here, but you can actually configure the disaster recovery site with Starwind. So Starwind is actually some kind of magical all-in wonder solution, which provide the snapshot, the availability, and the disaster recovery site. Okay, and let's move on to the questions. There are a few already actually in the question box, and I'm expecting you to answer more. A few questions from Rob. I'm a little confused on pricing. You get a free two node license with unlimited capacity, but if you want support, you pay 2.5 for only 4 TBs. Yeah, that's exactly how it works. You know, if you want somebody support you, that is what we actually give. If you are so confident that you can manage Starwind without any help, or you can wait until the until your questions will be answered on the forum, you know, fire away, that's your chat. With the L1 and L2 cache, does that allow for good performance when coupled with cheap SATA drive? You know, actually, when talking about the performance, the best term here is good enough. Because, you know, you shouldn't get the magnificent performance for, you know, like 1 million IOPS if you are just running one small database that eats up, let's say, thousands of IOPS. Well, yeah, I know. I mean, everybody actually wants it to have some 1 million IOPS storage system, but that you will have budget for in most of cases. So Starwind is doing something that is good enough here. Okay, another question from Rob. Is asynchronous replication only available at the enterprise license level? Yes, this is so. Well, I see that you have actually a lot of licensing questions, so if you actually want, you can drop me a quick email to the mailbox that I'm gonna share with you right now. That email gonna be on the last slide of the presentation as well. So, you drop me a quick email and we'll talk about it. Question from Keith Kunkel. I'd like to know more about the heartbeat and synchronization communications. Yeah, thank you for question. So, how exactly those things work? Synchronization channel is the most important part of the Starlink functionality. Why that? Because first of all, that the data link, the two servers of Starlink are communicating through, constantly. When, how to put it like, if Starlink is configured to run in round-robin manner, and that is 90% of cases, then the first server is gonna get from the client application first half of data. And the second server gonna get the second half of data, and the synchronization channel is the one that those servers will push those halves to each other. Also, synchronization channel is obviously used to synchronize data after the some kind of failure, and after the system came back up. So if let's go back here. So this is really important. And the general recommendation to the synchronization channels channel are first of all, we recommend it to be the back-to-back connection, like directly connect cables. Which is good because nobody wants to get involved to additional 10G port here. Also, the throughput of the synchronization channel should be equal or greater than the total throughput of all the incoming SCSI connections combined. And about the heartbeat, that's some kind of, oh yeah, and the synchronization channel is another, is the primary health monitoring channel that two servers, just check in if everybody is okay. If everybody are ready for the fight. So, if the synchronization channel goes down, then heartbeat comes into play. It does not synchronize the data. It just checks if the servers are online, and if both servers are online but the sync channel is down, then the servers gonna one of the servers gonna be marked as not synchronized and will close all the connection, thus preventing the split brain issue.
Well, that actually answers the question. Unfortunately, I didn't see any other questions, so I'll give you 1 minute to answer all, if to ask me some additional questions if you have some.
Meanwhile, how is the weather over there where you are right now? Because right here we have actually spring. It was sunny for a few days, and those weekends were really magnificent for me because I went skiing to Carpathian Mountains. It's a place called actually Kukavel. It was actually the first time when I was skiing, but I already fall off. I fell on the one once on the Black Hill. So yeah, I'm a rock star too.
Okay, I don't see any additional questions from you guys, so thank you for joining our tap room. We're gonna have another tap room next week, and also we constantly have some educational webinars. If I'm not mistaken, the next Tuesday is going to be one of those days, And thank you, everybody. Take care and love each other. Bye bye, guys.